China has a very strong interest in the war ending in Afghanistan.
And that could be one reason China is scheduled to host peace talks with the Taliban. It's Thursday, October 24th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming your way tonight and today, the Philippines aligns itself with a country that is not China, the U.S., or Russia. The Hong Kong government makes another offer aimed at appeasing protesters in that city. And many attending an NBA season opening game wear shirts showing support for those protesters. It is all on today's VOA Asia. A new round of intra-Afghan peace talks will be held in China next week, raising hopes for renewed negotiations even as violence continued to surge in Afghanistan's 18-year war. The talks, revealed by Taliban spokesman Suhail Shaheen, are planned for October 28th and 29th. It would be the first meeting between Taliban and prominent Afghans from Kabul since a July round held in Doha, where the Taliban maintains a political office. Monday, the U.S. State Department said its peace envoy, Zalmay Khalilzad, started a fresh round of talks with European, NATO, and U.N. allies about ending the war. For nearly a year, Khalilzad led the first direct U.S. talks with the Taliban. However, in September, just as a deal deemed imminent, President Trump declared the prospect dead after attacks in the Afghan capital killed more than a dozen people, including a U.S. soldier. Joining us on VOA Asia is Michael Kugelman, Deputy Director and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Washington-based Wilson Center. Michael, welcome. How did these talks end up being scheduled for China?
Well, you know, it's the story of China and its role in Afghanistan and its interactions with the Taliban is quite interesting. This will not be the first time that there will have been engagements between the Taliban and China. China over the last few years has very quietly engaged with Taliban representatives. China has a very strong interest in the war ending in Afghanistan. China is building this Belt and Road Initiative, as you know, this huge transport corridor across the road. And for it to succeed, it's going to have to pass through Afghanistan in some way. And obviously, it's hard to, you know, be building roads and infrastructure in a country that's at war. So China has tried to do what it can to increase the likelihood that there can be some type of launch of a peace and reconciliation process leading to an end to the war. And so that's really why China in recent years has reached out to the Taliban and tried to help convince them that it would be the right thing to do to agree to talks with not just the United States, but many players. And in this particular case, Beijing is going to try to enable the Taliban to launch this broader intra-Afghan dialogue in which you can have efforts to build a consensus among the Afghan people for what the proper path forward is to get to a peaceful outcome.
So I take it that an official delegation from Kabul will not be part of these talks. Is that correct?
That's as I understand it, yes. And, you know, the Taliban has been pretty consistent that it will not be willing to participate in any type of intra-Afghan dialogue at which you have government officials. It's sort of suggested, the Taliban has, that it would be willing to have present government officials if they're there in their private capacity. Now, what that means exactly is not clear, but I think particularly in this case, given that, as you know, there was just an election in Afghanistan some weeks ago and the results haven't been announced, so the government is really a lame duck anyway. So I really don't think that the Taliban would have any interest in there being any type of Afghan government official there.
What about the U.S. government? Does this write the U.S. out of these talks or not?
Well, I think it is interesting that China and a number of other countries that have tried to facilitate these talks with the Taliban, these are all countries that are rivals with the U.S. You know, Russia has hosted some talks like these. Iran has as well. So it's almost like you have these efforts on the part of Afghanistan's neighbors, those that don't get along with the U.S., to try to sort of undercut the U.S.'s own efforts to launch and in the current context, relaunch some type of talks with the Taliban. I think that it really should be seen as a good thing. The U.S. should see this as a good thing that China is meeting with the Taliban, because I think it's important for any actor out there that's willing to try to do whatever is necessary to incentivize the Taliban to be willing to sit down and hold negotiations. I mean, anything is better than the war at this point. However, the U.S. government is a strategic rival of Beijing's, and it's not going to like anything that China is doing that may seem to be competing with what the United States is trying to do. And of course, in this case, it's the fact that the U.S. is also trying to get the Taliban to the table to relaunch this talks process that's been on hold for almost 2 months now.
Michael Kugelman is Deputy Director and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Washington-based Wilson Center for Scholars. He is one of those scholars. As always, Michael, thank you. Michael Kugelman joined us via Skype. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now. Former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak said in court that he did not know that millions of dollars transferred into his personal accounts came from scandal-linked State Fund 1MDB. Families of victims gathered to hear explanations from Indonesian investigators about flaws at the Lion Air jet that crashed a year ago before a final report is released on October 25th. The recent nuclear negotiations between the United States and North Korea were substantive and lasted longer than anticipated. That according to a Swedish diplomat who helped arrange them. Indonesian President Joko Widodo named his defeated election rival, a former general linked to human rights abuses, as his defense minister Wednesday. This is VOA Asia. The Philippines has agreed to strengthen defense ties with India, an increasingly significant Western ally in Asia, as part of its accumulation of foreign support in case fragile ties with China suddenly break down. Last week, the presidents of India and the Philippines decided to work more closely together on defense and security in light of what the presidential office in Manila called a fast-changing geopolitical landscape in the Asia-Pacific region. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte welcomed India's role in a Philippine program to upgrade defense, the presidential office said in a statement Saturday after a visit by Indian President Ramnath Kovind. Duterte, despite warming up to China after taking office in 2016, is now seeking foreign ties elsewhere, fearing pressure from Beijing on a maritime sovereignty dispute over the South China Sea. Alan Chong is associate professor at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore.
He cannot be sure of China's one-way goodwill. He thought he had China as a friend. Then I think he realized that behind the smiles and the pageantry and all the economic deals, China was actually continuing to militarize its occupied islands in the South China Sea.
India has its own grievances with China and has been working with other countries, including the United States, to check Beijing's maritime expansion. Despite Duterte's efforts to foster a friendship with Beijing, with China pledging $24 billion in aid and investment to the Philippines in 2016, hundreds of Chinese vessels stirred up concerns after passing near Philippine-held islets in the seas contested Spratly Archipelago in April. And in early June, a Chinese fishing boat sank a Filipino vessel near the disputed seas Recto Bank, raising questions about a possible ramming incident. Duterte is now looking for closer relations with powerful third countries, using China as a gambit, according to Stephen Nagy, a senior associate politics and international studies professor at the International Christian University in Tokyo.
I think it's the Philippines really fishing for lots of different assistance and using China as the bait. Unofficially, the Chinese are probably not going to be happy that India has increased their relationship with the Philippines, and they probably will read it as the Philippines basically milking every cow rather than really forging strong and enduring relationship with China.
Duterte visited Russia earlier this month for talks that analysts say could generate arms sales. He's made efforts to cozy up to Washington this year after a strain in relations in 2016. And in May, the president made his third visit to Japan, which, like India, is working with Washington and other Western countries to check China's maritime expansion. Brunei, China, Malaysia, Taiwan, Vietnam, and the Philippines claim all or parts of the South China Sea. China claims 90% of the waterway as its own, and it has taken a military lead there over the past decade. India, located west of the Indo-Chinese Peninsula, does not claim any part of the South China Sea, but in September it held military drills with Japan and the United States. Even though the drills took place outside the disputed sea, India showed support of a rule-based order in Asian seas instead of giving credence to Beijing's claims. That, according to Jay Batangabakal, international maritime affairs professor at the University of the Philippines. India's East Asia policy that calls for stronger economic ties with fast-growing Southeast Asia, including the Philippines, would put further weight behind China's rivals in the maritime dispute. But Batangabakal says these ties may not be enough.
India itself is also, in a way, still exploring what it can do in Southeast Asia in general, based on its Act East policy. But in terms of substance, it's also been not moving as fast as, say, China.
Our thanks to VOA's Ralph Jennings in Taipei for the story. Happening now in Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has condemned a flagship tourist development with the South as an eyesore and ordered it demolished. That according to state media on Wednesday, in a stark illustration of dire relations between Pyongyang and Seoul. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. Hong Kong's legislature Wednesday formally killed the extradition bill that sparked 4 months of anti-government protest on the same day that the murder suspect at the center of the issue was released from jail in Hong Kong and said he plans to turn himself in to Taiwanese authorities. But protesters and opposition legislators say this is a small concession that will not lead them to back down from the 5 demands they seek from Hong Kong's government. VOA's Anita Powell has the story from Hong Kong.
The man in the middle of Hong Kong's political maelstrom said little upon his release from prison Wednesday, the same day that legislators formally rescinded the bill that mired the city in 4 months of anti-government protests. 20-year-old Chen Tongkai inadvertently set off 4 months of anti-government protests in his hometown, Hong Kong, when he violently killed his pregnant girlfriend in Taiwan last year. The semi-autonomous Chinese city cited his case in February in proposing legislation that would allow Hong Kongers like Chen to be extradited to China for trial. That lit a fire in this densely populated city, which since its handover from British rule back to China in 1997, was allowed by Beijing to operate under a one-country, two-systems agreement. This proposed extradition bill, many residents felt, was a step too far towards Beijing. And so the protests started in June, and violent clashes ensued between protesters and police. And the demands morphed into something much bigger than this piece of legislation. The city's chief executive, Carrie Lam, suspended the bill in June. But the demonstrations continued, with protesters in this leaderless movement shaping 5 demands to their government. Those include universal suffrage, an investigation of police violence during the protests, amnesties for protesters, and the full official withdrawal of the extradition bill. On Wednesday, they got one of those demands, when members of the city's legislative council officially withdrew the bill. But activist Lung Kwok Hung told VOA that it is not enough.
I think it's too little and too late. The 5 demands from the Hong Kong people should be dealt with. So Carrie Lam needs to tackle the rest of the demands, and she needs to deliver the leadership in order to make the whole community remember, those things should not be done again. And she needs to deliver a roadmap and timetable to solve the problem of Hong Kong. I don't think the Hong Kong people will stop protesting just because of this late and little concession.
Immediately after the bill was formally withdrawn Wednesday afternoon, opposition lawmakers called on the city's security secretary to resign. He did not reply to their calls. Lawmaker Raymond Chan told VOA that he, too, would not ease up on his demands within the halls of the legislative body.
It is not important. We will still give pressure on Carrie Lam and the secretary of the government, force them to reply the five main demands of the society.
Chen, the murder suspect, has also inadvertently set off a turf war between Hong Kong and Taiwan. He indicated Wednesday that he would willingly surrender to Taipei, where he faces murder charges. But Taiwan's leadership has asked Hong Kong to try him. They have refused, arguing that Taiwanese authorities have jurisdiction. On Tuesday, Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, lamented the situation. The Hong Kong government refuses to exercise its jurisdiction, she says. This leads to its own fellow victimized citizen failing to receive justice. If this happened in another country and the Hong Kong government adopted this attitude, every country's government would feel bothered. On Wednesday, Chen emerged from prison in Hong Kong, where he served 19 months after being convicted for using his dead girlfriend's credit cards after her death. He looked meek and contrite. He stopped by the cameras, bowed deeply, and said softly, "To the society and to Hong Kongers, I can only say sorry." Meanwhile, protests are set to enter a 21st week. Anita Powell, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Coming up, the NBA basketball season opens in Los Angeles with protest in support of Hong Kong protesters. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
Now this news from VOA Asia. The fire burning for a second day at a convention center under construction in New Zealand's largest city has caused more disruption Wednesday and cast doubt on whether the building would be ready to host a meeting of world leaders in 2021. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Two teams in the National Basketball Association, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Los Angeles Clippers, played their season opener in Los Angeles on Tuesday. Pro-democracy demonstrators took this opportunity to pass out T-shirts outside the arena in support of Hong Kong and its efforts to fight for more freedoms. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from L.A.
Freedom for Hong Kong! Be sure! Be sure!
It's free T-shirts for fans if they wear them to send a message during the first NBA game of the season. The people of Hong Kong have been demonstrating on the streets since June, fighting against China's growing influence and pushing for more political reforms.
Even though we're here, we support them, you know, all the way from U.S. This is organized by a lot of volunteers. You know, they actually funded $43,000 and print like 10,000 T-shirts.
This demonstrator, who won't give her real name, wants to support Hong Kong, but is still afraid of the Chinese government.
I may have to go back, you know, for a business trip or whatever, so it has to be cautious.
The NBA's link to this issue started when the general manager of the Houston Rockets posted a message on social media on October 4 supporting Hong Kong, only to get pushback from China, creating a firestorm in both countries and within the NBA because China is a big market for the NBA.
Just want them to have the same rights we have in the States. So I'm going to represent and stand with Hong Kong.
Some fans say NBA players also need to take a stand for democratic values.
I think you need to use your celebrity for cause.
But when asked about the issue, both the Lakers and the Clippers are trying to move on from the controversy.
We had a team dinner and everyone told their personal stories. China wasn't mentioned once.
Tonight is the only thing that matters.
The National Basketball Association is trying to walk a thin line to appease its fan base in the United States and not offend the Chinese government and the fans there. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
A news break from VOA Asia. Food insecurity in North Korea is at an alarming level, with nearly half the population, 11 million people, undernourished. That according to the UN Independent Investigator on Human Rights in the country. Thomas Ojea Quintana told the General Assembly's Human Rights Committee that 140,000 children are estimated to be suffering from undernutrition, including 30,000 who face an increased risk of death. Now on VOA Asia, have you ever thought about your posture while you're using a cell phone or a computer? Researchers found that most people, or at least most Americans, do not. But it's something everyone should think about. More now on that from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Cell phones and computers are just about everywhere on Earth. People hunch over these devices, and it causes more harm than they realize. When Dr. Lushanka Gunasekara began feeling pain, he thought he needed strength training.
It was mainly pain in my upper back and neck and shoulder area, and it was just on the one side.
A fitness trainer at the Orlando Health Gym knew the pain was due to poor posture.
The internally rotated shoulders, rounded back, head is down, neck is down.
Melendez worked with Gunasekara on his posture.
There, up, right there. Perfect.
All that hunching, or jutting your head forward to look at a screen, compresses your neck muscles. This causes fatigue, muscle tension, and headaches. It can also injure the vertebrae in your back, but it can be prevented and corrected.
You'd be surprised what strengthening your core and doing postural corrective exercises can do for your body.
Melendez says even being slightly unaligned can cause major strain, but researchers at Orlando Health found that less than half the Americans they surveyed seemed to care. Even a slight misalignment can cause major strain. For every 2.5 centimeters your head moves in front of your body, 4.5 kilograms of pressure is added to your shoulders. If you move your head forward 100 millimeters, the weight imbalance is even greater.
That's like equivalent to having a child sit on your shoulders.
Gunasekara says changing his posture made a huge difference.
Discussing what I was doing incorrectly, doing more core exercises, more mobility, being cognizant every day about my posture, it's really helped out, and now I don't have pain there anymore.
Melendez says while you're using a computer or cell phone, make sure you're eye level with the screen, if you can. Take frequent breaks and work on your posture. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
In the age of climate change, hurricanes are becoming more numerous and stronger. At the University of Maryland, a wind tunnel is coming in handy. VOA reporter Jacopo Luzzi went there to experience hurricane-force winds.
The Glenn Martin Wind Tunnel at the University of Maryland is helping engineers and architects learn how to build things stronger and more resistant to a future where tropical storm seasons are slowly becoming stronger and more frequent.
You measure the wind speed at which they will blow off, and that with various fastening methods. And it turns out that compared to prior practice, some relatively simple changes can increase the resistance a lot.
The wind tunnel tests everything from vehicle antennas to drones, satellites, helicopters, and trucks to gather engineering data for students in the university and companies who want to test their products. To understand the power of a hurricane, VOA News decided to experience firsthand the Glenn Martin wind tunnel.
This is Category 1 wind. This is Category 2. This is 140.
The information gathered here will hopefully save lives in the event of a storm like the Category 5 Hurricane Dorian that hit the Bahamas this year with a peak wind speed of 275 kilometers per hour, killing more than 50 people. The Glenn Martin team expects that eventually their research can lower the death toll by helping engineers design and build stronger and safer structures.
So we certainly need to respect hurricanes. We need to respect them as we're planning for events in the future, as we're making decisions about, you know, where we build our structures and our infrastructure. But we also, when a hurricane is forecast, we need to take the warnings from, you know, the Weather Service and you know, agencies and officials very seriously.
For more than 70 years, the Glenn Martin Wind Tunnel has conducted more than 2,000 aerodynamics tests. Jacopo Luzzi, VOA News, College Park, Maryland.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hai Young and Afra. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.